get back with maybe some pleasant news and on to Ronald Reagan, but I do have some other things I want to mention. This article about the irresistible drift towards nuclear war and the history of America making a lot of blunders and taking this policy of aggression, constant aggression, until we do have this multiplication of weapons, didn't just happen. And one of the books that I was reading today, just in terms of relaxation, one of the subscribers to my tapes had given to me was a book called In This Wild Water, The Suppressed Poems of Robinson Jeffers. Robinson Jeffers lived in Carmel, passed away here in Carmel, and built his home here down by the beach. And he was quite a popular poet. He had written for 20 years, and Random House had published his books. But in 1948, at the end of World War II, he wrote a book called The Double Axe and Other Poems. And Bennett Cerf and his editor at Random House, Sax Cummings, began to censor Robinson Jeffers because they explained that his view of mankind as being inhuman wouldn't go well in America. He thought about World War I and II, and he described American leaders as being self-seeking and no better than Hitler and Stalin. He didn't write poems that we supported Hitler or Mussolini and put them into power, but he said that Americans had delusions about themselves as being kind people or nice people. And this is true. We have the idea that we're magnanimous or generous, and we don't examine our slavery or racism or the way we've treated the Indians in America. And so Robinson Jeffers presented a book of poetry, and they put a disclaimer on the jacket for the first time and turned what was a poet's right to express himself into a political issue by saying, we don't agree with what you're saying. And this book has 10 of the suppressed poems, which they absolutely wouldn't allow in the poetry book. So that we think of freedom of the press in this country as being different than Russia, that we can say things here that you can't say in the Soviet Union. But even a poet like Robinson Jeffers couldn't write certain poems. He wrote about mischief and war. And these poems are about young people following the orders of older people, of being seduced by the pimps of death. One of his poems, there's a line, the president and his paid mouths and the radio shouters, the writers, the world planners, the heavy bishops, the England lovers, the little poets and college professors, the seducers of boys and the pimps of death. And he tells how these doddering old fools, he writes a poem about these doddering old fools who maintain an intellectual posture and who prostitute themselves and shout for war. I think of Ronald Reagan getting on in years. He'll be 70 at the time of his inauguration and never fought in a war. And this is what Robinson Jeffers was writing about. He was talking about a trap and sneaking mischief, how it sneaks up on you and how youth imitate old people and youth go out to fight the war, he said in his poem For Old Gentlemen. And he referred to the mischief of the old men who seduce young people to fight for them. And in this book, it tells how Robinson Jeffers was regarding man as deceiving himself, that he is not superior and he is like a hawk. He's like Adolf Hitler. The American is like Hitler. And he said, we turn away from what we are. And these are some quotations of Jeffers. He said, we're completely trapped in nets of envy, intrigue, corruption, compulsion, and eventual murder, and international politics. We have always been expansive, predatory, and missionary, and we love to lie to ourselves. We have entered the period of civil struggles and emerging Caesarism that binds republics with brittle iron, just like Caesar did. We identify and do what he did and are proud of it. He said, civilization everywhere is in its age of decline. He wrote this in 1948. And abnormal violence. Men are going to be frightened and herded increasingly into lumps and masses. A frightened man cannot think, and mass mind does not want truth. However, truth will not die, and he has an optimistic opinion. If you would go out and look for truth, it is there. And he said, your life will be meaningless without it. You have to have a clear shift of meaning and emphasis on man's better aspects and signs, and don't delude yourself. And he went on that to delude yourself is to be sure that you'll be herded to your death. Now, the poems that were deleted in 1948 by Bennett Cerf and Random House that were included in this lovely book, it's called In This Wild Water, what he was saying then is absolutely true now. This is 1980. He was writing that in 1948, and the American people were not allowed to have the mind of a man who felt what was going to come as a result of our inability to face our own responsibilities. We were deprived of this artist, of his ability to say these things, even though they were true, and the opinion of Random House and Bennett Cerf was the American people can't handle those things. Well, I don't think we can handle what's going to come down if we continue to put our trust into these idiotic politicians and their warfare cabinets, the National Security Council, the National Security Agency, Mr. Brzezinski, Henry Kissinger, and the like. Ronald Reagan was with Kissinger this week. Kissinger hasn't cleaned up the pain of Cambodia, Laos, Vietnam, Chile, the death of Allende, all of the repressions and violence that he instigated when he was head of the National Security Council would be enough to put the man in jail. He shouldn't even be allowed to have a press conference. I consider his likes as war criminals, as murderers, as mass murderers, and yet they're the advisors to people like Ronald Reagan, and Brzezinski is the advisor or controls the foreign policy, or tries to, of Jimmy Carter. I'm going to digress now away from this dismal view of history and what we are facing in the future for a few other news articles of interest that time allows, just to get on Jimmy Carter's case for a few minutes before we do get back to Ronald Reagan. Maxine Cheshire had a wonderful article in the Washington Post. I've mentioned her before, and if your local paper has her weekly column called VIP, she's quite an amazing woman who lets out little bits of pieces of what's going on in Washington, D.C. She had an article this week about a man named Nathan Landau, who may be your United States representative to the United Nations in the next week or so. Landau was suggested to be ambassador to the Netherlands, but it turned out that he had links to organized crime, and they decided he wasn't good enough to play patsy, I guess, with Prince Bernhard, who also was under the table taking $1 million or more from Lockheed and running around with various mistresses in Europe. Prince Bernhard is married to Queen Juliana. She's resigned now, stepped down. She was the Queen of the Netherlands. Landau was supposed to be the ambassador to the Netherlands. As I say, he was linked to organized crime at the time of his possible appointment by Jimmy Carter, but now he's considered to be U.S. representative to the United Nations this fall for the 35th session. He has three possible links to organized crime. One is a man named Joe Neslin. He's a gambling kingpin in Washington who's a consultant and wanted to open up a casino in Atlantic City. Landau was planning an $85 million promenade casino, and he owns a high-rise in Bethesda, Maryland, where this Joe Neslin lives. They broke into Neslin's place and found his links to Landau, and that's what squashed the appointment at the time of Landau to the Netherlands. He also has links to Edward Cellini, the brother of Dino Cellini, the associate partner of Meyer Lansky, and Landau was supposed to open a hotel casino with Cellino down in San Martin. Another link was with Anthony Plate, P-L-A-T-E, a member of the Gambino family of organized crime, who represented the family in Miami. Plate was indicted last year on racketeering and murder and loan sharking, and then he was found dead, presumed to be dead. His body hasn't been found. And Landau was vice president, director of a corporation called Quaker Masonry, which was run by Plate of the Gambino family. So right now, as I say, he's supposed to be the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. Landau was finance director for Jimmy Carter Mondale campaign in Maryland. He went to China with Robert Strauss on a trade mission, and all I can say about the United Nations is maybe we should bring back Shirley Temple. I don't think she was that bad representing the United States, but I guess we'll never know. An article now, we'll go back to Ronald Reagan for the remaining of this program and next week probably. An article in San Jose Mercury this last month on the discovery of Ronald Reagan. I'm always interested in the phenomena of these people that suddenly get a position to represent these huge corporations and the military defense system for the United States. I don't believe they just come out of a vacuum of making movies in Hollywood such as Bedtime for Bonzo or whatever Reagan made. I know he worked for General Electric. But the story, one of the big stories about the political career of Ronald Reagan has been that his attention in politics began in 1964 when he gave a speech for Barry Goldwater and surfaced as somebody, a political man with a potential on the horizon, possibly to run for governor or some other office in California. His brother takes claim to fame by saying that he suggested to Goldwater that Ronnie should go talk to him. But another man, an editor of the San Jose Mercury here in California, Harry Farrell, has another story, which I think is interesting to the collage of Ronald Reagan because he was present at this meeting. And he talked about a man who was behind Ronald Reagan by the name of V. John Kriebel, K-R-E-H-B-I-E-L. And Harry Farrell says that he was Kriebel was the first person to propose publicly that Ronald Reagan run for office, and that was 5 years before anybody else had discussed this possibility, that it wasn't in 1964. In 1961, Harry Farrell was present at a meeting with Kriebel, who was a Pasadena insurance man. Now, Pasadena was the center of the nucleus, the Lincoln Committee, Lincoln Club, and the committee to put Richard Nixon in power, that fabric in the 1946 time period to get him to run in the House of Representatives against Jerry Voorhees. Kriebel's from Pasadena, insurance man, later the ambassador to Finland under Richard Nixon. And in 1961, he had the post of Republican State Central Committee. And according to Harry Farrell, in 1961, in January, President John F. Kennedy had just been inaugurated. He was expanding his new horizon, his new frontier. Pat Brown, the father of our present governor, was the governor in Sacramento, and the Democrats were in 1960. Pat Brown was the governor of California, and John Kennedy had won the presidency against Richard Nixon. But the Pasadena, California clique of aerospace, Bank of America, and so forth had been behind Richard Nixon's career, and when he lost the election in 1960, they didn't give up. According to Harry Farrell, Kriebel went to Sacramento and tried to think of who he should have run against Pat Brown as governor. And they came to the conclusion in 1961 that Ronald Reagan would be the person. They didn't run him in 1962, but they decided he would run against Brown in 1966. There were two other candidates they considered, several others. One was a state senator, Dick Dalwig, from Redwood City, who later went to jail for fraud. And the other was Peter Pitches, the sheriff of Los Angeles County, who was very instrumental with Ronald Reagan's garden plot and the COINTEL program that I will get into in length and detail next week. Sheriff Peter Pitches was involved with the Sharon Tate, LaBianca murders, the Isla Vista riots in Santa Barbara, the Ruben Salazar murder, and counterintelligence in the Los Angeles-Santa Barbara area. So Peter Pitches was very important in the garden plot and the cable slicer committees that Reagan worked with when he was governor. But Kriebel named Ronald Reagan. He was a movie star. And they asked him, why do you want Reagan? This was in 1961. And he said, well, he heard him speak for General Electric, that he was their roving ambassador. So then he mentioned, Mr. Farrell mentions Nancy Reagan entered the picture, and she said to V. John Kriebel, are you serious? Did you mean that about Ronnie running for governor? And he said yes. Reagan stayed out of the 62 race. He re-registered from Democrat to Republican. And according to Farrell, this is a quote, with Nancy pushing hard, he's been running ever since. So the intent to use Reagan in this political machine is very important because I did mention last week and the week before the links of Ronald Reagan to the team, the assassination team that was responsible for murdering John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy, which made the road clear for Nixon to become president without the competition of the Kennedy brothers, and then in turn for Ronald Reagan to run for the office of President of the United States. Now, there was a little side twist to this article, which was interesting because of the desire to get rid of the Kennedys as a political group and the competition of Kennedy with Nixon, was that Kriebel went on to be the ambassador to Finland under Nixon's appointment. And I don't know whether Kriebel, K-R-E-H-B-I-E-L, is a Finnish name or not, but Lee Harvey Oswald went to Helsinki, and one of the big mysteries of the Warren Commission and the investigation was that he took a boat to Europe, to Le Havre, France, and then to England, and he went to Finland. And there's no route of commercial airline that would explain the time sequence that he got to Finland. I have a friend in Salt Lake City that told me about his family being in Army intelligence and meeting Lee Harvey Oswald at an airplane in Finland, but that's something that we can't check out in any way, and he's never given me any positive proof of that, so that stays in a rumor stage. But Lee Harvey Oswald had assistance in Finland in 1959 before he showed up at the embassy, the American embassy in the Soviet Union in Moscow. The time sequence was always off and never explained. And I think the ambassadorship of Kriebel to Finland, or the link of a man behind Reagan and behind Richard Nixon, is important to check out further. I don't know how it would be done, but were there any contacts in Finland between this man and Army intelligence and the Pasadena connections to Richard Nixon, Sirhan? Sirhan came from Pasadena and was brought to the United States in 1957 by the CIA and friends of Richard Nixon's through the conduit of the Greek Orthodox Church. So it'd be interesting to know more about V. John Kriebel and the Finnish Helsinki possible connections to Pasadena and the use of Lee Harvey Oswald, who was an agent of Navy intelligence and the United States government, who was instrumental in helping. He didn't shoot a gun, but his operation was instrumental in helping get rid of John Kennedy, who lost the election to Richard Nixon in 1960. And then the rest is history. Nixon was president, and now Ronald Reagan is going to get his chance to become president. Now, what kind of a president would Ronald Reagan make? As I say, I have piles of papers here to share with you on the garden plot, the cable slicer, the California violences that went on from 1966 to 74 when Ronald Reagan was governor of California, with the use of the COINTEL program, the CIA, the FBI, the Defense Department, causing havoc and death in this state and arrests and more violence in this state than any other state in the Union. One of the proposed charters by Paul Lazzolt, when Ronald Reagan is president, he's pushing this, is to relax the FBI, and I'll read you exactly what Paul Lazzolt has said. Many of you have copies of this, but I think it bears repeating in case you don't. Paul Lazzolt manages Ronald Reagan's campaign. He's a senator from Nevada. He has asked the FBI to investigate any person or group threatening to violate the law or whose actions have the potential for violating the law, whether the facts indicate a crime is imminent or not. If they believe that I have the potential to be violent, I can be arrested and investigated or wiretap or mail open. I don't have to own a gun or do any violent act if they define me as potentially violent. They ask the mandate that the FBI maintain surveillance of any person who advocates violating the law, even if it is nonviolent civil disobedience. If we don't like the law, there is a new law being put into effect in Sacramento now that if you have a petition signed and one name is fraudulent or not true, the entire petition be thrown out. That is negating the right to have any petitions in California at all. That law can't exist. It's not right because any counterintelligence agent can write the wrong name and all the right people's names would be negated. We can't violate the law, but if criminals write the law and it's nonviolent civil disobedience, they can be under surveillance. Paul Lazzolt and Reagan's group have asked the mandate that the FBI gather intelligence on any public demonstration with a potential for violence. If we go to Amnesty International, I'm sure that everyone will be photographed as we were through the Reagan administration in California, through all the anti-war meetings up and down the state and elsewhere in the country. They also asked the FBI to distribute criminal records to private employers. The criminal charges may not necessarily be cleared, but if you have a job and you were charged with any past crime, it should be able to go to your employer. They asked that they shield from prosecution for breaking the law any agent if they were following orders. Now, this is an absolute denial or negation of the Nuremberg law that we were following orders. Any agent who is following an order, even if it is to break the law, should be allowed to be freed from prosecution. If he did it, obeying an order, if he's told to blow up a bridge or to kill somebody at sight or bring them in, if he is obeying an order given to him by somebody else, he should not be prosecuted for that. And they also suggest that a new president can replace the FBI director at will the first 6 months that he's in office. He can take out anybody he wants and put in the person that he thinks should be the director of the FBI. Now, this is just a list of 5 or 6 points that Paul Lizalt has recommended. He is Ronald Reagan's campaign manager. He's a member of the Senate. He gives free license to commit crimes. He gives license to bug you, to follow, to interpret, and to see whether or not you are obeying their laws, but they don't have to obey our laws. Now, we just have about 5 or 6 minutes, so I'll give you a quick rundown on the kind of people around Ronald Reagan for the time that's left, and then go back. Maybe next week we'll go into, as I say, garden plot and cable splicer and what it was like, the state of mind of Ronald Reagan as governor of California. He comes out so placid that it's hard for you people in the 49 other states to visualize what it was like here if you were politically involved in trying to express your feelings, whether it was about the war or mental hospitals or prisons or justices, the courts that were perverted. There's a man named William Casey that's managing Ronald Reagan's campaign. He's his new manager. He was described in a long article in the Washington Post. This is March the 8th, 1980. Reagan's new manager, an outsider in charge so far. And it tells how he has taken over. He was former chairman of Security and Exchange Commission. And as soon as Reagan won in New Hampshire, the primaries, the other people were fired, and he took over completely. 100 aides of Ronald Reagan were fired, and well, it looked not intelligent. If you won in a primary in New Hampshire, then you should keep the people that helped you win. But this is the way that Wall Street, the Council of Foreign Relations, the CIA, and the Defense Department close in on Reagan and bring in Mr. Casey. He's been involved in various lawsuits. He's only 2 years younger than Reagan. He was an officer in the OSS before the CIA was formed, the Office of Strategic Service. He was chief of secret intelligence for European theater and worked with Reinhard Gehlen, the chief of Hitler's intelligence in Eastern Europe. He went to school in Munich and trained in Munich, and when he came back, he had a sign on his door that he got a degree in Munich, but he didn't. This was not true. He said that he got this degree, and he's been caught at many lies, and I'll go into some of those lies with you. He worked under William Wild Bill Donovan, the head of the OSS, and Donovan said, in quotes, Casey was overseeing important intelligence gathering mission during the Battle of the Bulge. That quotation is important because one of my favorite subscribers to these tapes got a book for me called Betrayal at Arnheim, and I'm going to do an entire broadcast or part of a broadcast on that. It's written by A. Lorenz, published by Grossen and Dunlap in 1969. And the theme of this book is that the Battle of the Bulge was sabotage, that 10,000 men were dropped at Arnheim, 7,000 of them were killed, and the man behind the lines, the double agent who betrayed the American troops in the Netherlands, was Prince Bernhard. He worked for IG Farben. He worked for the Nazis. He was the man who pretended to be the resistance leader in the Bulge at the time that the Americans lost 7,000 people. The book's called Betrayal at Arnhem, and this Mr. Casey was supposed to be an important man during the Battle of the Bulge, but because his team around him works with Prince Bernhard today, and Bernhard is very much involved in counterintelligence, he formed the Bilderbergers, the organizations of heads of corporations that want to control the world and the world's resources. Bernhard did not disappear after he played this double agent game and was responsible for stalling off the victory against Adolf Hitler that they wanted to do early and end the war early until these Nazis could retrench and organize all over the world and take their money to various banks. They stalled the war, and Bernhard was instrumental in helping stall that war until the Nazis could retrench. And Mr. Casey was working in the OSS at the Battle of the Bulge, so of course history has to go a little farther into that story. He worked with the Eastern Division of the Intelligence Chief in the Battle of the Bulge and with the OSS that became the CIA. Then he became a corporate lawyer, Undersecretary of State for Economic Affairs, President of the Export-Import Bank, prominent in Catholic charities that later, after the war, were very heavily linked to Michael Sindona and Mr. Montini, who became Pope Paul VI, and the Gambino family I've mentioned on other past shows, the network of the Nazis with the Vatican, with Prince Bernhard, and now William Casey, the advisor in charge of Ronald Reagan's campaign, are very intelligent, thought-out links that put the pieces of history together. That's why I thought this article was so important that I read to you at length tonight, because what he's pleading about is read the past before you sweep into the future and accept atomic warfare, where more than half this country will be killed. You accept it as inevitable. Know your cast of characters from the past. Study them, confront them, write letters to the editor, call talk shows on the radio, express your feelings, and if you studied it more, you'd have more outrage instead of the complacency of, well, if we're going to die, we'll die fast. There's a lot to live for, and there's a lot for them to explain. So read some of these old books and study these pieces. Time is out now, so I'll have to continue. Next week, I'll go into some more of the people behind Ronald Reagan and then get on with Jimmy Carter also and possibly John Anderson. In the meantime, this is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. You keep well and study your books, and I'll be back with you next week.